Will your church be one of the issues, etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues, etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues, etc. 300, click the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues, etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues, etc. 300.
But then comes Holy Week, and the pain and the scorn and the shame of the cross. And we're reminded that in that moment he took on the sins of the world, past, present, and future.
I have no doubt whatsoever that Barack Obama is a very typical 21st century mainline Protestant.
When you look at the church at Corinth, it really is Issues, etc. It'd be great to go back in time and give every member of that congregation an I Have Issues t-shirt.
Whether Christ's resurrection happened has nothing to do with faith. What it means, what its benefits are, that's a matter of faith.
Indiana truck drivers love Issues, etc.
The late Pope John Paul II, much remembered this week, 26 years in the office of the papacy, and during that time he did a lot to stand as the church's representative against many theological and political winds of the day, from communism to, well, you can name abortion, euthanasia, all of the issues that he dealt with in that quarter of a century as pope. Well, he's also not so fondly remembered by some who say that he stood in the way, that he adamantly stood in the way of the church's progress into the 20th and 21st century when it came to the issue of women. Is that true? Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Colleen Carol Campbell joins us here in the first few minutes of this hour. We're going to talk about Pope John Paul II and feminism. He once quipped that he was the feminist pope. We'll also talk with her about Ayn Rand Republicans. A little bit later, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will join us. We'll discuss media coverage of the death and burial of Osama bin Laden, also of the royal wedding service there at Westminster Abbey. We'll round off this hour of Issues, Etc., hearing from our listeners on the Issues, Etc. comment line. You can join us for the next hour. Coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, May the 3rd, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at IssuesETC. Colleen Carol Campbell is a regular guest, host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture, author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Why do many feminists today dislike the late Pope John Paul II?
Well, for many of the same reasons that they dislike many religious leaders, and that is that he was staunchly pro-life. He did not believe that there was a right to abortion for women. He defended sex differences as an immutable reality. He believed God created men and women differently for a reason, and that those differences have ramifications in real life, including life in the church. And he flatly rejected the possibility of the ordination of women as Catholic priests, saying that the priesthood had to be reserved only to men and that that was a matter of authenticity to the very beginnings of the church and something he couldn't even change if he wanted to, which he didn't want to.
So how is it that he once jokingly referred to himself as a feminist pope?
Well, he was the first pope to write a pontifical document dedicated totally to women. In 1988, he released an apostolic letter on the dignity and vocation of women. That was the name of it. He followed that up in 1995 by another letter to women. That was the name of that one. And then that same year in 95, he also released his Gospel of Life encyclical, really laying out the church's pro-life positions from the cradle to the grave, and included within that reflection also a significant section on women and the role that they play in building a culture of life. In fact, it was in the Gospel of Life encyclical where he first called for what he said we need a new feminism. One, he said, and this was his quote, that rejects the temptation of imitating models of male domination And then he went on to say, so that women can affirm the true genius, so that all people can affirm the true genius of women in every aspect of the life of society. Basically, you know, and he reiterated over and over in these various documents the Catholic Church's position that, that women are equal in dignity to men, and that there are yet differences between men and women, and that recognizing those differences can be a source of richness, not only for men and for society, but for women. And so he really called women to embrace the differences that come with being a woman, while also getting involved not only within the sphere of the home and the church, but also the public square to defend Christian values. So in many ways, he's been hailed by some as very progressive for this, but yet he never budged an inch on the things that were a matter of longstanding Catholic doctrine, and the priesthood being the prime example, because he believed that the priesthood is about fatherhood and paternity, and it's a role that is no more unfairly women are no more unfairly deprived of the priesthood than a man is deprived of being able to carry a child in his womb. It's simply he basically said a woman can't be a priest any more than a man can be a mother, and that's okay, that God made it that way, and that there's a great deal of joy and richness both men and women can find when we embrace our sexual difference instead of trying to deny it.
How much of feminist opposition to Pope John Paul II was due to his position on life, his position on, in particular, abortion?
I would probably say about 90%. I might be lowballing it there a bit. We do know, unfortunately, the secular modern feminist establishment, at least from the 60s forward, has been almost exclusively monomaniacally focused on abortion and abortion rights. So when you bump up against that and you say, no, there is no right to kill your unborn child, you're going to encounter a great deal of opposition, kind of regardless of what else you say about women, including making a very strong, biblically based case for a woman's dignity and the fact that we need her voice in public life as well as private. But that all gets pretty much overlooked. And within the Catholic Church, I guess the corollary to that would be among those who are really on the left, in terms of their political views or their ideas of gender politics on this question of women in the priesthood. Again, if you oppose that, whatever else you do isn't good enough, because they basically see the church as sort of an ecclesial version of a secular power structure, kind of a democracy. Everybody ought to get a vote. If men can do it, women ought to be able to do it. And there's not much of an understanding of the fact that these are not simply jobs that you get to jockey for the next guy to get the job, that these are callings from God, and they're part of the way the Catholic Church understands its own structure and its own vocations, and it's not something a pope can simply change. But again, just as with the abortion issue, when you oppose women priests, in some quarters you're written off no matter what else you say.
So there was a fundamental difference between the way Pope John Paul II saw the church and the way his feminist opposers from within the church, especially those who called for the ordination of women priests, saw the church.
That's exactly right. And this has been true, of course, not only of John Paul, but also of Benedict and of many faithful lay Catholics who rightly see the church as the body of Christ and don't see the church as just sort of American democracy reincarnated, or rather the precursor to American democracy, where it's all about majority vote and I get a representative and, no taxation without representation. That's kind of the attitude that a lot of these critics of the church tend to view it through. And, of course, this is the attitude that many secular journalists take when reporting on the church, which is, I think, why we get so many reports on where church battles are kind of seen through this political lens that, frankly, if you understand the ecclesiology of the Catholic Church, really doesn't make a lot of sense to view them as political battles. There are flawed human beings within the church, of course, many of whom probably have political motives, of course, but that's not the primary way we understand the body of Christ as Catholic Christians.
Does his stance on those things and his deep thought and writing on those things throughout his over quarter century papacy, does it help explain his popularity especially with young people.
Yes, I think so. In fact, you know, in general, he was a very popular pope with the young, as we all know from those hundreds of thousands, even millions, who turned out for his biennial World Youth Day gatherings. But with young women is where we're really seeing a kind of a surge in his popularity, even after his death. It's been 6 years now. And if you go online and Google feminine genius, genius of women, John Paul, these are his phrases, you'll find blog after blog of women saying, you know, I was away from my faith. I had just lapsed into pretty much a secular lifestyle. I was dissatisfied with secular feminism. I didn't know there was an alternative. And the Christian way of looking at my womanhood as a gift rather than a curse or something I have to deny is something that John Paul introduced me to, and for that reason I'm grateful to him. And so he has a lot of women fans, and they tend to be younger women who really aren't that excited about the inheritance they're getting from the secular feminist establishment that sort of wants to pass along the baton of abortion rights and androgyny, and no one's picking it up because it's not very interesting to the average American young woman. Whereas his defense of the dignity of women, and he was very outspoken of the problem of violence against women, especially all around the world in cultures where women are degraded routinely, and Christianity, Christians are the only voice speaking out for a woman's dignity. He was very clear on all of these, and it's appealing to women. So I think when you take off that lens of gender politics and, you know, set the abortion issue aside, and I'm, of course, pro-life, so I obviously agree with his stance and the Catholic Church's stance, but even if some of those critics, I think, could put that aside and look at what he said, they might be able to understand where he was coming from on these other issues. Unfortunately, though, we know, as in so much of the rest of our public life, abortion is this dominant issue that blinds people sometimes to the good things that their opponents have to say.
Colleen Kilcampbell is our guest for the next few minutes here on Issues Etc. live this Tuesday afternoon, May the 3rd.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Colleen Carol Campbell is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. In a few minutes, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will join us. We'll talk about media coverage of the death and burial of Osama bin Laden and media coverage of the royal wedding. Then Issues Etc. comment line, your comments from our comment line in the last 10 minutes of Issues Etc. today. Colleen, one of the things I've found remarkable about Pope John Paul II, and maybe has to do with the fact that he also was Pope at the dawn of a new media age and a flourishing of media in general. He is one of the most quoted popes ever in by those social conservatives, maybe inside and outside the pale of the Roman Catholic Church, who were making public square arguments in favor of the unborn and against things like euthanasia and physician-assisted suicide. He's a very quotable pope.
He is, and that term culture of life, which we know, of course, was adopted by George W. Bush, who is not a Catholic, that was John Paul's term, and it has now become a phrase ubiquitous in our culture and all to the good.
You have written recently about some current concerns you and others have about so-called Ayn Rand Republicans. How would you summarize them, Colleen?
Well, basically, these are radical libertarians who are kind of wrestling for control of the GOP right now, already have a pretty strong say within the Tea Party movement, which is also, you know, kind of engaged right now in a bit of a skirmish for the GOP. It's time, of course, for Republicans to start looking around for a challenger to President Barack Obama. And as usual, there's a lot of debate over the role of social conservatism, fiscal conservatism, etc. Ayn Rand was a novelist who created what she liked to call her objectivist philosophy. She outlined it in her novels mostly, also in a few other books, but basically the novels are sort of sermons disguised as stories, not terribly well written. But one of them has recently come to the big screen, Atlas Shrugged, Part 1. And which, you know, promises to have sequels, obviously. Atlas Shrugged was her novel that basically depicts America as a socialist state run amok. Tea Partiers, libertarians, have embraced this, not all Tea Partiers, but the libertarian edge of Tea Partiers, of the Tea Party movement, have embraced this film as kind of a harbinger of things to come if President Barack Obama continues to have control. So basically what it is I think, you know, there's been a lot of rallying around this film. Freedom Works is a Washington-based Tea Party organization that screened it at the CPAC, Conservative Political Action Conference, in February. They're making a big push, and they're basically trying to kind of propose Ayn Rand as the philosopher for the GOP moving forward in 2012 and beyond. And I think that's very problematic for a number of reasons.
What is the biggest reason you would find it problematic?
Well, Ayn Rand was a rabid atheist, and it was an atheism that, I mean, basically she saw no role for altruism. She thought it was basically a sucker's game to try to live for anything other than yourself. She lived this philosophy in her personal life. She was known for openly pursuing an adulterous relationship with a protege of hers who was decades her junior and had and doing so even after the young fellow got married. And you know, she peddled in her novels this philosophy that you should live for nothing other than yourself and your own happiness. She called selfishness a virtue. And, you know, she rebuffed anything that smacked to her of collectivism. Now, obviously, we know there are some real problems with a government that grows too large, too powerful, too intrusive. And all of that is, those are serious concerns, and the Tea Party movement has been effective in raising them. The problem with Ayn Rand is that she's so far on the extreme of living totally for yourself and having this vision of a society where it's really dog-eat-dog, and there is no altruism, but I think it's not only, first of all, a completely impractical way to govern a nation. It's at odds with our founding fathers' vision of what America is, and I don't think it's going to sell very well either to the electorate in general because, again, it's a very selfish philosophy that I think, if anything, will help propel Barack Obama into a second term. So Republicans should give that some thought before they embrace it.
With only about 10 seconds, do you think a lot of the Ayn Rand resurgence population is simply due to the fact that people haven't actually read what she actually said? About 15 seconds.
I I hope that's the case, especially in the case of some of these Republican legislators saying that she's their inspiration for going into public office, and some of these folks are professed Christians. So I hope they haven't read her. On the other hand, what does that say about leaders who don't bother to read the people they say are their own inspiration? So whatever the reason, I hope this fad dies quickly. It's adolescent literature and adolescent attempts at philosophy, and it certainly is not a good basis for the GOP's future.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture, author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can read her columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Go to the on-demand page. Colleen, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Todd.